Hello, everyone. You are listening to the Toffee Blues podcast. This week, I am joined by Callum Davis. I'd like to say he's jumped on the podcast with us for this week's edition. Callum, how are we doing, mate? We all good?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad.
Good, mate, of course. Yeah, we're going to be talking about all the talking points at the moment with Everton, coming in on the back of a really impressive win at the weekend, back-to-back wins for the Blues. Obviously, we beat West Ham 1-0 before the international break, and then we were hoping that we could go to Southampton and get a result, and we came back with all 3 points on the South Coast, which was fantastic. You know, the first time in what seems like so long that we got back-to-back wins. Callum, set us off, mate. How does that feel? You know, back-to-back wins, not something we're used to, is it? But all the same, no. Delighted to get the result, weren't we?
Yeah, well, I thought it was a game that we probably should have been targeting for a win on the road. I mean, I don't expect us to go on the road and blow sides away, especially with how we were last season. I think everyone will just take quite a solid, you know, simple season with after the drama of last year. But yeah, I did think we could have snuck something from this game. And then when we went behind, that I did fear for us, but I thought we battled well and I thought we were good value for 3 points, definitely.
Yeah, 100%. Going away, as you just touched on there, Carl, it's with Everton, we're never confident in 3 points. And it was a tricky game, of course. We mentioned last week on the show that, you know, we don't really have the best of records down there at the best of times, do we? Let alone when, you know, the club's been in better states than it is at the moment in recent years. So to go down there and get 3 points, it was obviously, you know, it wasn't out the realms of possibility. We're more than capable of going to Southampton and getting 3 points. But there's always just that little bit of, what's the word I'm looking for? There's always just a bit wary of what this Everton side can be like, isn't it? You know, especially going to a ground like Southampton where we haven't had much joy in recent years. But, you know, all the same, we battled, as you said, and we got the points. We went 1-0 down, but straight away we got back in the game. I think it was 3 goals in 5 minutes. Just on how we started that game, obviously, I think it's fair to say that we dominated the first half. And I struggle to remember a time when Everton looked so comfortable in an away game. So for us not to go in ahead at the break was probably a bit of a frustration. Were you getting a bit twitchy at the time? We weren't putting some of these chances away because, you know, as I said, we were the better side in that first half, weren't we?
Yeah, well, I think that does stem from the new midfield that we've obviously got. It helps us to dictate games more because we can kind of exert our will on the opposition, if you will. So I do think that helps a lot, but I think that is probably our one fault at the moment. I'm quite happy with, obviously, the defence is the best in the league. And the midfield, I couldn't pick a fault with it. I think the only issue with the squad I could find is we are lacking a little bit. I think a little bit of a lethal finishing touch. I think Morpay will bring that in flashes. And I think Calvert-Lewin isn't to be relied upon. But when he's there, will give us something akin to that. But yeah, it is a frustration when you dominate games like that. But in the same vein, it's nice to see that from Everton because I think in the past, we've always looked uncomfortable in possession when we've had, say, Michael Keane and Yerry Mina at the back. I think neither of them really know what to do. And especially in managers of the past where we've not really had many patterns of play, I think they've looked, you know, they've looking around, there's no options, and then it'll just end up being pumped to a wing. I think now the midfield will drop in, the wingers know where they're supposed to be. And as much as it's a frustration not to score, I think it was more pleasing, you know, going in, still hadn't conceded. And we were, as I said, exerting our will on the game. And then to fall behind was a shame. But the way we bounced back was, it means that we've got the control and then the desire and the will to fight back when things go not the way they're supposed to.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree, mate. I think it's very cliche in football, but Everton did show a lot of character. And I think that's just comes back around to that point of the sort of personalities that we brought into this side now. It's a completely new look defence. The midfield's just been completely transformed. Neil Mopay, he is what he is. And, you know, he scored a great, great goal against West Ham the week before. Couldn't quite get on the end of anything in this game. of course, we've got Calvert-Lewin waiting in the wings to come back as well. So hopefully that can only be a good thing. But yeah, the characters and the leaders in this side just showing their worth again in this game. It's all, you know, I'm sure you can agree, and a lot of people listening to this podcast will agree, that there's been many Everton sides in the past that if you fall a goal down at St. Mary's away from home, I think it's going to be one-way traffic. And I think, you know, a lot of Evertonians are probably not be too much hopeful that we get 3 points, let alone, well, get 1 point, let alone three. So yeah, it was fantastic to see again, just the spirit and the fight, and just how quickly we turned it around as well.
We've got Lampard to thank for that, his character and the characters that he's brought in as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just comes back around to that old saying that I think everyone's quite comfortable with now, is that, you know, there just seems to be a bit more of a direction now that, you know, the owners maybe took a step back and he's letting people carry on with their jobs. I think that's starting to really transpire onto the pitch now with Frank Lampard and the types of player he's bringing in. So back-to-back wins for Everton, obviously fantastic. We spoke briefly then about leaders and characters. Arguably one of the biggest and most popular at the moment is Mr. Connor Cody. He's just completely transformed this Everton side, hasn't he? The way he talks, you know, the way he carries himself in pre and post-match interviews, the way he carries other players through the games, you know, we could sit here all night talking about how good he's been for this Everton side. Just briefly before we touch on the on some of the Connor Cody news that's sort of been circulating in the last couple of days or so, what are your thoughts on how Connor Cody settled into this Everton side? I'm sure, you know, there's no prizes for guessing there. He's certainly transformed this side, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's been a massive part of what Lampard's wanted to do. And I think it marks also a smart change in the transfer policy, as you mentioned, with Mashiri stepping back and obviously allowing Thelwell to do his thing. Because that's obviously a Thelwell signing, isn't it? I think I'm not sure if this is 100%, but he was the one who brought him in at Wolves. So he obviously holds him in a very high regard. I think him and Tarkowski, without them, we don't even have half the success and the stability that we've had this season. Yeah, I just think that he's brought in leaders all across the pitch now. So in every position, you can see someone who, if things aren't going right, they can pick them up. You've obviously got the obvious candidates in Tarkowski, former Burnley captain, Cody, former Wolves captain, but then even the youth of Onana seems to have bundles of leadership. And I think even, like, you know, you've got your Colemans, which goes without saying, but you see even Pickford, I could name so many players. And in the past, I've always thought Everton were quite spineless. And I think that's been completely shifted in just one summer transfer window.
Yeah, 100%. You know, we've gone from crying out for leaders, haven't we? And now you can probably pick about five or six on that side. You know, you mentioned Tarkowski, Cody. I think Pickford's really come into his own ever since Benitez left the club, really. He sort of took on the mantle, hasn't he? You know, he wants to carry this club through the tough times. And it was great to see him back in the 11 as well. There was no Calvert-Lewin, obviously. We touched on him briefly before. But I think the biggest sort of shock team news-wise was Dwight McNeil coming into the side for Anthony Gordon. Dwight McNeil, he's been okay. I think he's probably been, you know, I don't like to dig players out as such, but I think it's a fair comment to say he's probably been the least impactful, maybe, of the new signings we brought in. I think that's a nice way of putting it.
I don't think that's an insult to him as well, because of how big of an impact of all the other signings have been.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah. Yeah, obviously he dropped Anthony Gordon. I think that the reason being that he wasn't feeling 100%, which is fair enough. He's played a lot of football. He's still young. I had no issues with that, really. Dwight McNeil, he came in up until the goal. If I'm being totally honest, I don't think he was having the best of games at the time. But, you know, you've got to give credit where credit's due. And he put the ball in the back of the net, didn't he? And it was a great finish, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a good finish. And I do agree with you. I think he has struggled in the glimpses that we've seen of him. But I think, again, he's only like 22. I think he's one that can develop into something really special for us. And I think he gives us something a bit different to the likes of Gray and Gordon, who are, you know, more tricky and they can, you know, turn left and right and dazzle defenders. He's a pretty direct winger and you can tell what he's going to do. But sometimes, vast majority of the times, you can't really stop it. I think he'll work hard 100% of the time, and maybe in a game like Southampton it's not as impactful, but against a game against a bigger side where you know you're not going to have much of the ball and you'll need to work harder. I think that's really, really come into his own. And hopefully with this goal, it might give him the confidence to kick on and become what we all hope he can be.
Yeah, let's hope so, absolutely. Obviously, Dwight McNeil getting the winner there for Everton. Last weekend, brilliant for us, obviously. Just moving on for a moment, and you know, we sort of touched on it briefly before, but now obviously I want to talk about the news that Connor Cody, of course, it's easy to forget that he's actually on loan from Wolves. I feel like he's fitted in that well, and he's, yeah, you know, he's talked to the fans so much. It feels like he's been here for forever, but he's only actually been here for a matter of months. So obviously there's a lot of talk. It would be absolutely ludicrous for Everton not to even think about making his deal permanent. I'm quite confident, you know, that deal will become permanent. I think,
yeah,
the club obviously wants it. He obviously wants it. And, you know, if reports are to be believed, the Telegraph report today, that the option to take him up on a permanent deal is around £4.5 million. But let's be honest, Cal, it's a no-brainer, isn't it? Connor Cody, I think your money's safe if you were to bet on him to become an Everton player permanently.
Yeah, it's an absolute steal, £4.5 million for him, for everything that he brings, not just the leadership qualities, but he is a technically really good footballer. He organises the defence, but then he can ping a pass. And I think it would, as you said, be ludicrous not to take up that option, because he's been such a big part of the resurgence.
Yeah, it's just been an absolute revelation, haven't we? You know, even his goals, you know, obviously we know he scored, he put the ball in the net in the Merseyside derby, albeit it was unlucky to be ruled out for offside, but the goal he scored against Southampton, it was quite similar to the goal in the derby, except obviously this one was onside. But you're right, he's got other qualities as well, hasn't he? Obviously, he's a fantastic defender, first and foremost, but technically, he can really help us out in other ways across the pitch, wasn't he? Because the way he took that finish to get to the equaliser, yes, at the weekend, it was a great finish, yeah. The striker's finish, wasn't it? So there's a lot of things that Connor Cody can offer Everton side. So fingers crossed that he will be becoming an Everton player permanently. And as I say, I think there's a good chance that he will. Other news this week is, obviously it's not so much on the pitch, more off the pitch, this news. Obviously on this podcast, we like to cover everything that's happening with Everton at the moment. And yeah, I think it's a fairly decent bit of news. You know, obviously the kit manufacturer, a lot of people are quite into the kits and the gear and everything. Obviously Everton have been, the make has been Hummel for the last three seasons. I think it's our third season with Hummel being the make. Obviously the news came out that deal has now been extended into 2024, which of course will run into Everton's last season at Goodison Park. So yeah, I think it's worth talking about. Definitely. What have you made of Hummel's kits? Obviously, we have never had them before this deal. So are you happy to see this kit manufacturer extended? I think they've made some quite okay kits, to be honest.
Yeah, when we first signed with them, it was quite an unassuming deal, wasn't it? I thought, because we were in a lot of financial trouble, and I assumed it was just the most financially viable deal for Everton. But I think they've probably produced some of the more attractive kits in the last maybe decade or so. There's a few misses, but it's never going to be perfect. And I can't really complain with it. And I think if we were to hand it to anyone to take us into the new stadium, I can't really see it being anyone else. My only gripe would be occasionally you get photos of a peeling off.
Yeah.
But yeah, what can you do?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Hummel made some good kits for Everton. I think it's quite, you know, it's an easy move, but you know, it's a lot of sense. You know, there has been kit record sales since we've been with them. I was a big fan of the first kit they brought out, in Ancelotti's first season. I was a big fan of that one. Obviously it's behind closed doors, but I thought that was a great kit. Last season, not so much, but I feel like last season's home shirt, a lot of the reasons why I don't like that is because it's just associated with everything that was last season. So I find it very difficult to get on board that, but I'm a really big fan of it at the moment. So Hummel, a great kit manufacturer, and I'm really pleased that we've managed to secure that deal for, albeit for next year. We'll see what happens. So my question to you now, Callum, is obviously if Hummel are going to be this kit manufacturer for Everton's final season at Goodison Park, do you think we can expect maybe to see some kind of special kit, if you like, commemorative kit, something that Everton can be wearing? Because of course it's easy to forget this is next season. You know,
I know.
It's bizarre. It's mad to think. Yeah, it snuck up on us massively. You know, I don't know whether it's just everything that happened with the pandemic or the horrors of last season, but you know, next season is the last season at Goodison Park. So what do you think, in your opinion, can we expect from the home shirts for next season?
Well, the stake deal, I'm not sure if this is 100% as well, but that should have run out by then. My prayer would be that we pick an aesthetically pleasing sponsor.
Yeah.
Because I guarantee that will be the year where everyone has to buy a kit, because that is the season where we moved over. I think we'll probably do the normal lineup, and similar to, I'm not sure if you'll remember it, but it was the summer that we signed, the Koeman summer where we signed all those players. Yes. Sandro Ramirez is one of them that I remember.
Yeah.
And we wore, I think it was something associated with Dixie Dean, a kit, and it had like a white collar and no sponsor, and it just had like a simplified badge.
Yeah, it was the 125 years of Goodison shirt, wasn't it? It was the shirt that Sandro scored his one and only goal in a preseason friendly. I think we were playing, I don't know, I think it was a Sevilla. That was it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it will see something similar to that, but I do think we'll see something very Goodison themed. Hummel have been quite good as well for integrating the history of the club into, so they'll try and, you know, look to the past and past kits, like with goalkeeper kits. I think last season's goalkeeper kit, was that the yellow and the black, yellow and blue one?
Yeah.
That was, you know, akin to an old one, stuff like that. So they've obviously got, you know, someone working on that kind of stuff. I'm sure they'll have plenty of good ideas for how to properly send off Goodison in the form of a kit.
Yeah, definitely. I think a good thing about Hummel as well, which I've picked up on, is that they're very good at taking the fans' advice on board, interacting with fans on social media. And I feel like, you know, that can't be overlooked, can it? You know, the last thing you want is, you know, for so long, hopefully we're starting to see a bit of a change now, but fans of this club have been frustrated with the lack of communication between, you know, themselves and the powers that be. So communication's massive in football now, not just with Everton, just in sport, in the Premier League, in football in general. So to have a kit manufacturer who, you know, talks to the fans and, you know, takes on suggestions and all the rest of it's a great thing. And I feel like a lot of people are very happy. I think a lot of the feel on social media has been very positive with the extension of this deal. You're always going to get people who are going to want, you know, big multi-million pound deals with Nike and Adidas, but, you know, that's just not going to happen at the moment. But yeah, that's fine by me. So yeah, Hummel have extended their deal to 2024, taking Everton into a fourth season with, I think it's the German manufacturers, am I right in saying? I think they are German. Yes, that's correct. Okay. Yeah. Moving on. Bit of talk. Obviously, we're all aware in the summer there was a lot of talk about Everton potentially being sold to an American consortium led by Peter Kenyon. That sort of went down like a lead balloon a little bit in the weeks leading up to the season. You know, there was talk that, I don't know, the exclusivity period ran out, or they couldn't agree on certain aspects, whatever, and it all went very quiet. And then obviously Farhad Moshiri came out, you know, we come back to that point about communication, and he said that, you know, Everton Football Club is not for sale. He didn't rule out, obviously, he wanted some investment in terms of the stadium. Mm-hmm. But in the last week or so, you know, there's been a couple of stories doing the rounds about how potentially there are some buyers coming into the club. What's your take on all this, Callum? Because we're all aware of what happened with the consortium in the summer. That sort of didn't take off, if you like. You know, a couple of weeks ago, there was a story knocking about the Kaminski and his he sort of broke off from the consortium, if you like, and he expressed his own desire to maybe purchase the club. And then today as well, you know, we've got the story about Jeffrey Soros, one of the world's richest men, if reported to be believed, is in discussions with Farhad Moshiri. What's your take on all the sale talk?
I think probably a year or a few years ago, probably even 6 months ago, you would have got a lot more of a positive reception to this kind of news, purely based on the fact that it was anyone but Ken Wright Moshiri. Since I think the turning point, and it's easy to say, was the fans' protest with regards to Vitor Pereira and Lampard. Moshiri gave in to fan demands, appointed Lampard. We got through the season success, and he's obviously learned from all these protests and the, you know, people pointing out his mistakes. And I have to say, since getting rid of Benitez, which was his biggest blunder since, you know, joining the club, he's been pretty faultless. And I'm happy to just let him keep going the way he is, because we are moving in the right direction. you never really know with new owners. You see with Chelsea's new owners, Todd Boehly, seems like a bit of a live wire. You never really know what you're going to get. And it represents a period of, you know, you can't predict anything. And I think that's the last thing Everton need at the moment.
Yeah, in my opinion, I can't see Everton being sold before the stadium.
No, me neither.
I just can't see it. Okay, mate, I think there was obviously a bit of legs in the talk in the summer with the consortium. Of course there was. But the way that petered out, I just can't see Everton being sold before we get into the new stadium. Will obviously be worth a lot, will be much more of a valuable sort of proposition, yeah, asset, if you like, once we're in the stadium. And obviously, your fingers crossed, we're in a better position football wise then as well. You know, the early signs are there at the moment with performances on the pitch. But yeah, I think it's no secret that Moshiri is looking for investment in terms of funding the stadium, of course. I fully expect him to be exploring those avenues. But in terms of a complete sale of the club, I just can't see that happening until Everton at least move into Bramley Moor Dock, which I think is probably the plan when Moshiri took over. You know, Everton are obviously going to be worth a lot more.
I've seen that vision. It seems like it's all been culminating towards the stadium build, and then I can see him, like as you were about to say.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's a business, isn't it? It's a business model. Yeah. You know, you'd be naive to think anything otherwise. It's a business model for him. He's a businessman. He's certainly not a football man. I think that goes without saying, the last couple of years or anything to go by. But yeah, Everton are worth a lot more in a 55,000 whatever seater stadium on the banks of the Mersey. So I think we can expect a sale in the next few years, but I don't, I could be wrong. We could get sold. I don't know. I'm just spitballing, but obviously I can't see Everton being sold altogether.
I agree with you there.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's just something to be aware of at the moment. You know, it'll probably die down within a couple of weeks anyway. This sort of talk always does. It's a story that does the round for a couple of days. And then, someone drops a bucket of water on it and it just peters out into nothing. Just before we start wrapping things up, big game at the weekend, Manchester United. It's always a big game when United come into town. We have a lot of confidence at the moment. Playing really good football, two wins on the bounce, unbeaten in seven in all competitions. We don't want to get carried away, even though it sounds like I might be getting carried away. But, you know, for all United's faults, and we know they took a hammering at the weekend as well, they're still a fantastic side with fantastic players, brilliant manager. How do Everton approach this one, Callum?
I think the game will be won in the midfield, as is so often the case, but I think particularly on Sunday, I think what the positive thing I think that's come out of the loss on the weekend is the fact that Ten Hag will be able to reshuffle the side as he sees fit without, you know, losing morale. They'd obviously won 4 on the run before that game. The likes of McTominay were actually playing quite well. So he couldn't really justify dropping him for the big money signing Casemiro. Now that they've obviously taken that hammer in, I think we will see Casemiro come in, midfield three of him, Eriksen and Bruno. I think that's where the game is won, if we can keep them quiet, because the defence isn't spectacular and the front three without the service isn't going to create much on its own. Eriksen and Fernandes with the midfield that we've got, I do back us, especially in front of a Goodison crowd, to keep them quiet. But I suppose we'll see how it goes. But I do think we are in with a very good chance, which I wouldn't have said probably a couple of games ago.
Yeah, of course. I think a lot of people are probably confident playing most sides at the moment in the Premier League at home, certainly. It's a bit of a mixed bag when we play Man United at Goodison. We've had our fair share of fantastic results, don't get me wrong. But also, you know, we have been turned over by them a few times as well. Obviously, we won at home last year against them. Was that Anthony Gordon deflected strike, which proved to be a really important 3 points for us, which obviously went on to help us in our survival. But, you know, United, that they aren't amazing. They aren't an amazing side. They are still a very good side, of course, as I mentioned.
A side in transition. Players.
Yeah, side in transition, if you want to call it that. Yeah. Obviously, that big hammer and they took to City. They got mauled by Manchester City last weekend. I don't know if that's the most ideal thing to happen, because I remember earlier in the season when they got mauled by Brentford as well. Yeah. And then they came in off that. Obviously, Ten Hag got them in off the back of a really disappointing result. And then they got, you know, a big win against Liverpool. And, you know, we don't want to sort of be on the receiving end of an angry Manchester United side. Of course, at the time of recording, Manchester United are in Europa League action tonight. So let's hope they get all that out the system tonight. So we don't, we're not on the end of some kind of resurgence. But, you know, in all seriousness, it's going to be a difficult game. Fantastic players. Okay, there's an argument there, they're underperforming, but we've still got to watch out for you know, the star men for their side. Individually, they're still brilliant players, aren't they? You know, Jadon Sancho, Casemiro, Marcus Rashford, who's hit a bit of form this season, Christian Eriksen, Fernandes, Cristiano Ronaldo, yeah, you know, the fantastic
trouble
players.
Any side, couldn't they? They could trouble any side, but I think I think if we were to keep it nice and tight, which we have done, and not allow space in behind, then the likes of, maybe less so Sancho, but Rashford, Martial, will struggle without something to run towards. And then also, I think set pieces are somewhere where we could be really dangerous, because obviously we've been so solid defensively. But also going forward, we've threatened the goal on Saturday, scored from a little set piece routine, and Onana back across to Cody. And we saw that Brentford troubled them when targeting Martinez, the centre-back. They've not got a great deal of height in their side. You know, maybe the centre-back, whether it be Varane or Maguire, and then Casemiro. And then realistically, there's not much height. We should have Tarkowski, Onana, Cody, whoever else, all going up. I think the game could be won by slender margins like that if we keep it tight.
Yeah, 100%. If we are going to beat them, it's unlikely that we'll battle them as such. You never know. But still, we've got to remain sort of, you know, pragmatic in our approach to this game. Very good side. Yeah. This sort of marks the beginning of a bit of a tough period for Everton, if you like. We've got some really tough games coming up, which is just reinstates the importance of those wins against West Ham and Southampton, I think, as well. We've got Tottenham Hotspur next weekend as well, and then I think we travel to Newcastle in midweek. So we've got three really difficult ties coming up. Manchester United at home under the lights at Goodison. I'm sure the fans will be absolutely up for it. The players will be up for it. I don't think United will be wanting to come to Goodison Park at the moment at all. I will say that. No. They will not be
You know, I don't think many teams would.
No, not at all. I think a lot of people are maybe starting to, as I said, I've got to be careful with my phrasing here, because I don't want to sound like I'm getting carried away, but yeah. I think some people and maybe the media, other teams are starting to maybe sit up a little bit and take note that this isn't the same Everton side as last year now. You know, we've got the best defence in the league, as we already know. We've got some quality players. And, you know, we can be a match for anyone, especially at home. So Manchester United, it represents a great opportunity for us to build on this confidence, isn't it? And that's what it's about. We can take so much confidence into this game, can't we, Carl?
Yeah, and even if, like, we don't get the best results out of these next three games, if you can see, you know, the same patterns and the same solid foundation in place, then, like, I will always come away from a game feeling pretty content. We started the season off not brilliantly, you know, the losses against Chelsea and Villa. And the Villa one particularly still stings now. But again, I still thought we weren't terrible, and you could see what we were building towards. And that has kind of culminated in, you know, the 7 unbeaten in all competitions, I think you said. It's tough to like predict when you're going into runs like this, but all you can hope for is good performances, because I think we'll be, like you said, we're a different side this year, and we won't be, you know, we won't get rolled over, that's for sure.
No, I don't think we'll get rolled over at all. You know, I think we have the best defence in the league for a reason, because we've got some very, very good players playing for us at the back at the moment, which is very fortunate enough for us. But like I said, I go back to that point again, United, it's still Manchester United. There's always that little in the air. You've got to come in with a bit of pragmatism, but it is the start of a difficult run of games. But I go back to that point I made before. A lot of people, I'm not saying a lot of people will accept defeat or accept dropping points, but if the performance is there, then a lot of people, I'm like you, Callum, I agree. If we can see the direction on the pitch and they've given everything, I think it's fair to say 90% of Evertonians would be quite happy with that.
I don't expect the world, do they?
No, exactly. We just want to see players running and putting bodies on the line. Like that clip that's... It sort of really stuck out from the Southampton game when everyone's throwing bodies on the floor. We've got that kind of players in the side with that type of mentality now, which, you know, I remember at the start of the podcast when you pointed out Lampard, Thelwell, they've brought in these these characters, these very cliche again, but Everton type players, if you like.
Yeah.
And I saw a tweet earlier on, I can't remember who put it up, but they mentioned it. It's almost like Lampard is going back to sort of David Moyes' sort of principles in that sort of era. So would you agree with that, that Everton maybe starting to go back to basics and just trying to bring in Everton type players now?
Well, we've got the steel, but then with a little bit of class, which I think at times Moyes' sides lacked. You know, you've got the spine of a really, really strong team and full of leaders. But then you sprinkle in, like, you know, Iwobi and Onana have just got something a little bit special. And then the front line is all, you know, reliable to do something. And then, you know, Patterson, when he's fit, is also a danger. So, yeah, I'd agree with you with that point, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, difficult game at the weekend, but one, Everton will be confident they can go and, you know, more than capable of getting a point. But if we get three and three wins on the bounce, I'm sure the Evertonians would be an absolute dreamland. But yeah, we'll see. We'll turn up. We'll play our game. We'll be up for it. Of course, we'll be up for it. And we stand a great chance. You know, as you know, we go back to that point we made before, United will not want to be coming to Goodison Park at 7 o'clock on a Sunday night under the lights. No chance. You know, it's all about those first opening 10, 15 minutes. You know, it only takes someone to throw in a big, you know, a hefty challenge or something like that, and everyone's up for the game. And
yeah,
you know, it's a really exciting prospect, actually, given how, I can't remember the last time going into a game and haven't been in such good form. So to be able to go in knowing that, I think it's quite an exciting prospect that we can take the game to United. And if we can build on this unbeaten run, then God, we really are in a healthy position then. But we'll wait and see on that one. So we'll leave the podcast there. Massive thank you to Callum Davies for coming on the pod with us tonight. Be sure to give him a follow on Twitter. You can get the Toffee Blues podcast wherever you get your usual podcast. There's also a version going out on YouTube, of course. So be sure to like, comment, and subscribe if you haven't done so already. So yeah, thank you for listening. And we shall see you next week on next week's episode of the Toffee Blues podcast. So thanks for listening, everyone, and take care.